to go back again and just talk about the forests in Ireland, the Forestry Commission, I suppose a United Kingdom or a British run organisation, they started the forestry in Ireland.
Well, they did, yes. That's right. That is correct. I've written a book on that, Down in the Forest, and there's a copy of it available for anybody to read in UCD Library in the Forestry Department. It's on. It's there for anybody to go in and have a look at it.
And
it's not published, because at my age, I don't want to get into all the hassle of publishing.
Okay, and your research when you were doing that, what did you uncover that was different or unusual?
What I uncovered about that was that, first of all, the percentages, the way they changed over the years, and the rapid rise that there was in the use of timber, other than in a sawmill. The pulp mills was a big, because the pulp mills all came on stream together. The pulp mills in Athy, in Clondalkin, in Waterford, in Scariff, and so forth. And there were, you know, there was only a small amount. When you divide the timber between them all, there was a big scramble every time it was up for tender to get the timber, you know.
And so who took over the...
They were mainly American companies that are in operation at the moment, in as far as I know, in Leitrim and somewhere in the west of Ireland as well. I'm not really up to it at the moment, but there's a big one in Leitrim. And Leitrim was a county that was condemned to forestry by Sean Flanagan when he was Minister for Forestry. He arrived one night in Carrigan-Shannon and he said Leitrim should be evacuated. We did.
The forestry in Ireland, were there private owned?
Very few. At that time, it was down to 5%. Now, of what is planted each year is 95% private. That is as a result, first of all, Ireland was declared an agricultural country by the EEC, and therefore there was a cap put on the price that would be paid for land for forestry of somewhere around £12 per acre, old pounds. This was to make sure that only the boglands were available for forestry, not good land wouldn't be offered even. Now that price structure has disappeared because it is felt that they gave a reason in Europe for it, that... Oh yes, you had a mountain of agricultural land available, other than what was available before, and as a result, it's a free market, and farmers were given grants to plant trees like they do in Scandinavia. Every farm in Scandinavia has a forest, and so the same happened here. Then, after about 1980. That began to develop, with the result that the net situation now is that 95% of what's planted each year is privately owned, and the farmers don't do the work themselves in most cases, because it's a skill as distinct from agriculture, and they get in forestry companies to plant and to fence and to do all the other things, you know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose in your lifetime too, you would have seen. Is there somebody at your door? Sorry,
is there?
There, I think there is.
He was, you know, going a little bit doddery, and he used to come out. I was stationed in Emo at the time in Leash, and we took over his estate, and he came out and he started telling me what to do. He's in his mind, he still owns the place, like, you know, and he was a very difficult person to deal with. You couldn't go saying, well, will you fob off? I own it now, like, you know.
And this was the landlord in the area. What was his name?
Oh, God, I can't remember. It was Woodbrook was the property.
Yeah.
It was a double barrel name, and I forget it. I just forget it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to nail him for that. God. He's probably dead very long ago.
Was there, but these families, Anglo-Irish families, they planted loads of very good trees.
Oh, they did a very good job.
And do you think the Land Commission were right or wrong in the way that they divided up those estates?
It's hard to say that. I wasn't close enough to the bone to know that now, or to give an answer that would have any weight, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Certainly I know that a lot of poor people that didn't have any land before got some land, including my own father at home. I'm the eldest of 13 children, and he got 14 acres on that scheme. I know that.
And who was your father?
Henry Stagg was his name.
Oh, from where?
Oh, English origin. My grandfather, George Stagg, came over in the middle of the last previous century in the British Army. Didn't like what he saw when he came over. Got out of the British Army as fast as possible. His two sons wanted to go to America. He wouldn't let them go. He said, your country needs you. You stay here and work for your country. You need to build it up. My country has destroyed it. And they produced 23 children between them. two sons, and everybody lived happily ever after. But he was a classic example of an Englishman who became more Irish than the Irish themselves.
Was there any members of your family who fought in the First War?
No.
So they weren't... Your father was a soldier, you said.
He was a soldier, but he got out of the British Army, became a butler around 1890. Before the First War.
Before the war.
Yeah, yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
And he was a butler in what house?
Rutledge's were I don't know, were the landlords or what, but they were big house people anyway. Rutledge's in Cornfield in County Mayo.
Yeah. So there was a background there. So, I mean, landed gentry estate.
I mean, he rather than let his two sons go to America and possibly become very wealthy, he reared them up to have their families at home all through the land war in the 1890s, the 1916 thing, and all the War of Independence, the Black and Tan War, and two World Wars. He went through all that rather than let them go to America, because he said they were needed at home.
And did he become more Irish than the Irish themselves?
Yeah. Oh, that's what I said. I in my wedding speech for his great grandson, I brought that point out. That he became more Irish than the Irish themselves. The first thing was he got out of the British Army as soon as he possibly could after coming here.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is, yeah.
And was he high ranking?
No, he was a private.
Was he? Yes.
Yeah.
When it came to your lifetime, I suppose, your growing up days, your father was still... a butler in...
No, my grandfather.
Your grandfather was the butler. Sorry, your father was... He was managing, wasn't he?
My father?
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused now.
No, my father was a ganger in the county council.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And your own father's occupation then?
That's my own father I'm talking about now.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a ganger, isn't he?
A ganger, yeah. That's right.
And... in the county council?
Well, he had various... He was self-employed as well, different things, when slack times. But he mainly was a ganger throughout his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In many ways, you made it through difficult times.
Oh, yes. I had to jump barriers all the time. I had to work a year and a half as a juvenile labourer in a forest in Mount Bellion, County Galway, to enable me to have a half a chance of getting into Avondale.
Yeah.
So nothing came easy.
It's a fantastic story, and I'm delighted I came to record this story. Listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
The only other thing I wanted to mention was I won't be available now for any further interviewing for quite a long time, because I'm under what you call medical surveillance. I think is the right way to put it. So if there is anything that you want to know, the phone.
The phone.
Yeah.
Okay.